פסוק חב ויסו מקודש. After Kodesh, ויבואו בני ישראל כל העדה הור הור. They came to the place called Hor Hohor. And there is where Aaron HaKohen dies. It says at the end, in Pasuk Chof Tes, Vayiru Kol Ha'edo Ki Govah Aaron. Everybody saw that Aaron died. Vayivku es Aaron Shloshim Yom Kol Beis Israel. So in Chazal it's brought down by Aaron. It says Kol Beis Israel. By Moshe Rabbeinu at the end of the Torah it says Bnei Israel. What's the difference? Because Aaron HaKohen was the Oyev Sholem Veroidev Sholem. He had much more contact with the people. So therefore, by Aaron HaKohen, when he died, everybody felt it. When Moshe Rabbeinu died, it's only Bnei Israel, the ones who were closer to Moshe Rabbeinu, they died. So that's what Rashi says here, called Beis Israel, Ha'anoshim Ve'anoshim, everybody. Now, Rashi also brings down another Midrash, that when Aaron HaKohen died, immediately the clouds disappeared. So again, the clouds represents that feeling of closeness among the Jewish people, the power that something which unites the Jewish people disappeared. So because Aaron represents that the closeness among Jewish people. So right after that it says Vayishma HaKna'ani. And Chazal say this is what they heard. They heard that Shemes Aaron, says Rashi, Venistalku Anane Kovoy. And because of that there are no more anonim. So this Knanim, the Melech Arod, so it sounds on the surface that it was a nation within Knan. And it was specifically the king of Arod, Yoishev HaNegev, the one who is in the south. So it says Rashi, Yoishev HaNegev, why would it tell us Yoishev HaNegev? Why is this a relevant fact? Says Rashi, it's a relevant fact because we have to use it as a code word, Yoishev HaNegev. If it says Yoishev HaNegev, it must refer to another place where some people are described as Yoishvei HaNegev. We know in a few places it says that Amolek Yoishev HaNegev, that in the south of Eretz Yisrael was Amolek. That's what it says. When the Jews went through the Negev, in Pasha Shlach, they went through the Negev. So they came back with a report, Amolek Yoishev HaNegev. So Yoishev HaNegev is a code word for Amoleki. So if so, there is an apparent contradiction here. It says Vayishma HaKnani, and then we describe the Knanim as Yoishev HaNegev, and the Knanim are not in the Negev, it's Amolek who is in the Negev. This is what Rashi says, Ze Amolek. Shenemar Amolek Yoshev Eretz HaNegev. Then it says, it goes on, Kibo Yisrael Derech HaAsorim. What did he hear, the Knani or the Amalekite, whoever it is? We don't know, is it one or the other? According to the simple Pshat in the Torah, is the Knani. According to Rashi, it's the Amaleki. That he came Derech HaAsorim. What is the Derech HaAsorim? Says Rashi, this is the Derech HaNegev sheholchu bo meraglim. The Jews happened to come Derech HaAsorim. So what does it mean that they were walking, they were going through the Derech HaMeraglim? Says the Amek Dovor, no, that's not what it means, that they walked specifically on the path that the Meraglim took. What was the goal of the Meraglim? What did they want when they came back and gave a bad report about Eretz Israel? What was in their mind? What did they really want?
Not to lose your position, and
Well, you see, well, we are talking about their subconscious. The subconscious motive was not to lose their position. But what were they saying? What was the point that they were making? Let's not go in now, because now we can't beat them unless what? Unless God is doing the job for us. But we don't want God to do the job for us. We want to do it ourselves. We want to go in al pi derech hateva. So derech ha'asorim, which is connected with the word losures ha'oretz, which is the word used by the Meragli, means the Jews are coming fulfilling the wishes of the Meraglim. Derech ha'asorim, they are coming al pi derech hateva. And how is that relevant to this, whoever they are, Canaanites or Amalekites?
They can beat them.
That's the point. Now, if they are coming up in Derech HaTeva, they can beat them. Therefore, Vayilochem beYisrael. They made war against the Jews. Vayish bimimenu shevi. They made war. And what was the result of the war? Vayish bimenu shevi, says Rashi. The simple interpretation is they took prisoners. They didn't kill anyone and they took prisoners. According to the oral tradition, says Rashi, doesn't even mean that. Eino elo shifcho achas. Shevi, the word shevi, is again, it's like a code word. In Mitzrayim it says, I ad b'chor ha-shevi. And what does it mean, Bechor HaShvi? Everybody died. All the firstborn died, even the firstborn of the Shvi. So who is the Shvi Mitzrayim? The firstborn of the sheep, of the servants. So the word Shvi, says Rashi, is a code word for a maidservant. So who do they take prisoner? A maidservant. Why would they do that? Why would they take prisoner, one maidservant? What is the point in it? How do you picture it? They make war against the Jews and what? And the maidservant is fighting the battle? And who usually, where do you take prisoners? You fight. And then during the fight, somebody gives up and you catch him. But how do they get to the, to take a prisoner, right? One of the maidservants. It's hard even to picture such a thing. If they are making war, what are they doing with the maidservants? And what kind of a war was it? They didn't kill anybody. Nobody got hurt here. All they did was to take a maidservant. Nothing else. Hard to picture. Very, very difficult to picture. Vayidar Yisrael neder laHashem vayomar. And the Jews made a neder. Im nosoin titein esom azeh beyodi vacharamti esorehem. If Hashem will help us that we should be victorious against them, we will destroy, we'll make a harem out of their cities. In other words, we won't benefit from the spoils. So we'll do it only l'shem shamayim. If we don't benefit from the spoils, that's l'shem shamayim. Vayishma Hashem bekol Yisrael, vayitein es haKnaani, vayacharem es oreihem. And this is what happened. Says Rashi here in Posuk Aleph, after he describes to us who these people were. Ze Amolek shenemar Amolek yoshev beretz haNegev, says Rashi, v'shino es leshoino. You know why this Amaleki is called a Knani? Because he started talking the language of the Canaanite. Ledaber beloshen Knan, and he started talking like Canaanites, kedei sheyu Yisrael mispalelin laKodesh Baruch Hu. We are going to fool the Jews, says Rashi. We are going to start talking the language of the Knani, so the Jews will be sure that they are dealing with the Knani. So when they pray to God, they will pray, help us beat the Knani. And since we are not Knani, we are Amaleki, their prayer won't help. That's the way to beat the Jews. Veheimenon Knani. So how do the Jews manage not to fall for it? Says Rashi, Ro Yisrael levusheihem kelevushei Amalekim. Couldn't fool the Jews because the Jews saw their garments and they were wearing Amaleki garments. But leshoinam loshen Knan, but the language was Canaanite language. So the Jews decided, Omru nispalel stam. We can't ask to be the Amaleki because maybe they are Knani. We can't ask Hashem to be the Knani because maybe they are Amaleki. So therefore, what do they say? Ha'am hazeh. Didn't say Knanim. If you take a look at the prayer, in Pasuk Beis, it says, Im nosoin titen es hom hazeh. Whoever he is. Hazeh means whoever it is in front of me. Stam. She'nemar, Im nosoin titen es hom hazeh biyodi. This requires an explanation, because whatever made them figure out the trick that they can trick the Jews by speaking the Canaanite language, so they could also change the Canaanite garments, you know, to Canaanite garments. Why didn't they change their garments? So, and besides, again, how do you picture it? That the Jews, while they were going to war against the Canaanites, why, they overheard some generals giving orders in Canaanite. That's how you have to picture it, right? Very difficult to know what language your enemies are talking. Very difficult. So you say, well, it's possible. Yeah, it's possible. But it's, again, it's not easy to understand how the Amalekites plan to fool the Jews by making the Jews see that they are Canaanites. How? By talking Canaanite. And all you can overhear when you're going to war is some orders. So the Jews right away will catch, oh, those orders were given in Canaanite. Very, very difficult. Now, I looked for a Yalkut Shimoni. Unfortunately, I couldn't find it downstairs, because in the Yalkut Shimoni, we have the following Midrash. First of all, there is a Midrash that seems to contradict the Midrash that Rashi is bringing. In the Yalkut Shimoni, right here on this spot, it says the following. It starts the same way. The Canaanites decided to fool the Jews by talking Canaanite language, by dressing like the Canaanites. You hear the difference already. What? The Amalekites dressed like the Canaanites. Here, dressed like the Canaanites and spoke like the Canaanites. But the Jews weren't fooled, because they saw their faces and they realized they were Amalekites. This is the Yalkut Shimoni. Very similar Midrash, but instead of the garments, in the Yalkut Shimoni it says just the opposite. The garments were Canaanite garments, but you can't change your face. Your face is still an Amalekite face. Now, this is one important difference between the Midrash Rashi brings down and the Midrash that the Yalkut Shimoni brings down. And the second important point that I found in the Yalkut Shimoni is the fact that it says the following. And the Amalekites decided to fight against the Jews, and they took their arms and they put it bifnim, whatever that means. I'm just quoting to you the words of the Yalkut Shimoni. They took their arms and they put it inside, and they put on top of it Canaanite garments. Okay? And I ask you, if you are going to war, what's the point of putting the arms inside? What is the point that the Yalkut Shimoni is making, that they took the arms and they put it inside? So let me tell you what, two things. How Rashi's Midrash and the Yalkut Shimoni are not two Midrashim. The way we are going to understand what Rashi is telling you, you will see that Rashi and the Yalkut Shimoni are saying exactly the same thing. And the difference is only on the surface. It's just a matter of how they expressed the same thought. Let me tell you what is behind the thought that Rashi is telling you. This idea of talking the language of Canaan and wearing the garments of Amalek, what Rashi means is the following. First of all, the Malbim says that the difference between Sofo and Loshen, very important difference. Sometimes a language is in Hebrew, Sofo, like in the Dor HaFlogo, by the Tower of Babel, it says that everybody had Sofo Achas, at the end of Parshas Noyach, it says. Everybody spoke one language, Sofo Achas. Do you know what the oral tradition says? Which was the language that they spoke? Hebrew. Hebrew. They spoke Hebrew. But, says the Malbim, even though they had one Sofo, Safa, they had many Leshoinois. Because when we see in Parshas Noyach, it says, Lishonom, each one had his own language. They had many Lishonos, but only one Safa. What is the difference between many Lishonos, but only one Safa? Says the Malbim, what? Both mean language, right? Safa means language and Lashon means language. But the word Safa is associated with what part of the body?
Lips.
The lips. The word Lashon is associated with what part of the body?
Tongue.
The tongue. What is the difference between the tongue and the lips, says the Malbim? The tongue is internal and the lips are outside on the surface. What the Torah is telling me, that the people of the Dor HaFlogo in the Tower of Babel had the same Sofo, it means that their speaking Loshon Kodesh was something very external. Internally, each one was far away from Loshon Kodesh. Do you hear? Their Sofo was one. They all spoke Loshon Kodesh, and they put on an act that their goal is Kedusho. But it was only Sofo Achaz. Had it said Loshon Echos, had it said one Loshon, you know what would be the implication? That their culture was the culture of the Torah. But if it says Sofo Achaz, it means that their cultures, they developed independently of the Torah. But they covered it up with some kind of a lip service to Loshon Kodesh, Sofo. This is how the Malbim learns over there.
So then how can it mean in Noach, Ishkil, Shono, that they had different languages?
Each one had his own, their own private languages, which means their real culture, right? Was separate. Each one had his own.
But they all spoke Hebrew even.
But they all spoke Hebrew. There was like an international language. But the point that the Torah is making, don't think that Hebrew was their Lashon. Hebrew was only their Safa. So don't be surprised that their whole commitment to Hashem just falls apart.
But they never had a second language.
They had Lashonos. They had many second languages according to the Malbim. Not that they all spoke only Hebrew. Each one spoke his own language. Because if you take a look in Parshas Noach, right before the Dor HaFlogo, it already says, Kilesh Shoinom, each one had his own language. So you can't say that they only spoke Hebrew, period.
That mean the Malbim doesn't hold that all languages came from Lashon HaKodesh?
No. According to the Malbim, it's not true at all that they originally all spoke only Hebrew. It's not true. Hebrew was the international language. That is what the Malbim says. That is what the difference between Sofo and Lashon. Okay? Now, according to this, if we say now that the Amalekites learned the Loshon of the Canaanites, it doesn't just mean what it seems on the surface. They took a dictionary, learned a few words, and then they started speaking Canaanite in order to fool the Jews. It's much more than that. If it would have said Sofo, that they learned the Sofo of the Knanim, then it could mean that they learned a few words and they know the language. But if it says the Loshon, what does it imply now? That they actually became Canaanites. So when the Torah says, right, when the Torah calls this Amalekite Canaanites, the Torah is not telling you that they learned 20 Canaanite words. The Torah wouldn't call someone who learns 20 words a Canaanite. So if the Torah does call the Amalekite Canaanites, there is a reason for that.
Sort of the culture.
They became culturally Canaanites. Now, what does the garment represent symbolically? We believe that the symbol of the garment, we're not talking about the physical garment that they had, Amalekite garments, their shirts were Amalekite shirts. We're not talking about that. We are talking about something much, much deeper, which metaphorically is called the garment. This is what we are talking about. Because had it been just their shirts, they would have changed their shirts to Canaanite shirts, right? If it's true that the Amalekites wore special shirts, all they had to do was change their shirts if they are going to so much trouble to learn their language. So why do they change their shirts? The answer is that we are not talking about the physical garments. We are talking about something much deeper, which is called metaphorically the garment. The question is, what is that which is called the garment? So, it says in Sforim that the source of garment is man's flaw, the sin of man, the weakness of man. That is the source of all garments. Because originally, man doesn't need any garments. Why doesn't he need any garment? Even though man naturally must be covered, he must be clothed, Why? Because he can't be exposed to Hashem. Man shouldn't be exposed to Hashem. He feels too exposed. He has to cover himself. That's the lotion of tzinius. You have to be a tzonua. But Odom HaRishon Koidem HaChet was covered. What covered him? Odom HaRishon Koidem HaChet focused towards his essence, which was spiritual. He saw himself not as a body. He saw himself as a spiritual essence. And his body was a covering. But he never, like for instance, if he would have seen his reflection in the water, he wouldn't say, oh, that's I. He would have never said it. His eye, his essence was spiritual. He saw himself, he saw his physical body like a covering to his essence. And it's interesting, Alpi Kabbalah, one of the reasons we look at our nails, Moitzei Shabbos, is related to, did you ever hear? The body of Odom HaRishon. The body of Odom HaRishon. Body of Odom HaRishon, it says, well, it's like nails. So everybody thinks that what we are saying is that Odom HaRishon had a body made out of nails. That's not what it says at all, you see. What it means is that the same way we relate to our nails, we have a special relationship to our nails. We don't see our nails as a real part of our bodies. It's something external to our bodies. It has no nerve ends. It gets too long, so you cut them and you change them, you know, new nails grow. We don't identify with our nails. That's the way Odom HaRishon looked at the whole of his body. This is what it means. That we look at our nails in order to remember the state of Odom HaRishon Koidem HaChet. Like the Balei Kabbalah say, this is why you look at your nails. This means that Odom HaRishon had a special attitude towards his body. He had the true attitude towards his body. He saw that his essence is spiritual and that his body is like a covering to his essence.
Is there a pshat that says he had a skin made of nails? Is that completely wrong?
What do you mean? It's completely right, not completely wrong. I'm just telling you what it means. Like everything in Midrashim, you have to know what it means. It's always right. The question is, what is he telling you?
The Midrash does say that.
The Midrash does say that, of course. The Midrash does say it, and it's right. The question is, what is right?
So, I mean, is it not literally true that he has skin of nails? Or is it also
that is literally true. That is the literal meaning of a body made out of nails, which means a body that you relate to the way we relate to our nails. That is, I said, you have to develop a method in understanding what they are saying. Otherwise, they are talking a different language, you understand? I mean, you have to know their language first.
But still, then I said, is it literally true that
it's literally true. The question is, what does literally true mean?
But did he have a skin of nails or not?
Did he have a physical skin and nails?
Did he have something that's called nails?
You got skin. Did he have nails instead?
I'm telling you how to learn pshat, and you keep asking me the same question. I'm telling you, of course he had nails. You just have to know what it means, having nails. You see, you have to learn their language. You can't say, well, you know, they say something, I look in the dictionary, and then I know what they say. You must learn their language. If you don't learn their language, then it's Chinese they are talking Chazal. You understand? You have to know what they are telling you.
Let me ask it this way. Are these, both these things true? That he had a physical skin which is made of nails, and he regarded it as exterior to it.
Listen, I don't know. I wasn't there. I'm just telling you what Chazal means. You understand what I'm saying? That's what Chazal means. Chazal means that there is a certain relationship, right? The Chazal is trying to point out something very important. How Odom HaRishon looked at his body. Why Odom HaRishon, before the sin, did not see himself as being naked. That's all. So by telling you he had a nail body, they are telling you the secret of how Odom HaRishon looked at his body. He saw his body as being a covering for his essence. Therefore, he doesn't sense his nakedness. What happens after the chet? After the chet, he becomes a sensual person. A person that sees his body as his essence. And his instincts as being part of his essence. Not as something being like something external to him. No, he sees his body as his essence. So what happens once you see your body as your essence? Then you're naked. If you're naked, you have to cover yourself. So the garment becomes, originally, the body's the garment. The more physical you become, the more the garment is your essence. You know, you extend yourself to your garment. So, of course, you need a garment. Now, yeah.
Why do we look at our nails on Shabbat on Hatzalah?
So that's all right. I don't want to go into it because you know that I'm just telling you what one that in the Sifrei Kabbalah it mentions the connection between that and Odom HaRishon, because you know the Eish is Odom HaRishon. We won't go into it. You know that the whole idea of lighting the fire Moitzei Shabbos. You know what? You know, I'll pick a bullet. Because that's the first act of Odom HaRishon. So, right, yeah.
What's different than hair?
It's not different than hair. It's not different than hair at all. But the hair has another way of being shown as that something external to us. But it's not different than hair. Now, so it says like this. The goal of the world is to reverse the process. The goal of the world is to separate our real essence from our physical essence. The absolute return to that original state, that will be Trias HaMesim. Trias HaMesim will be the complete reversal of the process, which means when the focus will be only on our real essence. And that real essence will revive in a different form, whatever that means. But that is the concept of Trias HaMesim, which means that the goof, that's why the Balei Kabbalah have no problem with Trias HaMesim, and they don't see it as a contradiction to Gilgul Neshomes. You know, the concept of Gilgul Neshomes by the Balei Kabbalah, the reincarnation of the souls. And everybody asks, so who will come back? You know, if there is reincarnation of the souls, who will come back? The Balei Kabbalah laugh at such a question. They say it's an invalid question because the essence is the same in the Gilgul Neshomes. It's only the covering that changed. Right? When we say somebody lived 100 years ago and somebody lived now and somebody lived 1,000 years ago, we are talking about the same essence in different shapes and different coverings. So you can't ask, so who will come back? The essence will come back. So I'm just giving you just as an example of what does it mean that the goal of the world is to go back to the undistorted view of your essence. That is the goal. And that is the job of Torah, to bring the Jews back or bring the world back to the original state of Odom HaRishon Koidem Achei. Who is our antagonist in this world? Our antagonist in this world is the Koichos Hora, the powers of evil. The powers of evil, little by little, became concentrated into people. Before, the powers of evil were just abstract ideas, like before the hate, before Odom HaRishon Koidem Achei. Where was evil? There was evil, because without the potential of evil, there would be no free will. But evil was in an abstract form. Little by little, that evil became part of Odom HaRishon. It translated itself in Odom HaRishon, distorting his sense of essence, thinking that his body is the essence, okay? Which means that the garment became the person. Do you hear what happens by Odom HaRishon? His garment became the person, which is part of the distortion of Ra. Now, that distortion of Ra becomes embodied into a people. There are people who actually becomes the ones who absorb the evil of the world, to the point that eventually, by destroying those people, you will destroy evil. Who am I talking about?
Amalek.
That's what Amalek is, the embodiment of evil, when evil becomes part of a person, to the point that the person can't shake off his evil anymore. The evil and himself become one and the same. Therefore, we have no choice but getting rid of the people. If we could shake the people out of their evil, we wouldn't have to kill the people. We only have to kill the people because it came to a point when the evil and the person becomes one. Now, that's another way of saying that the same way that the Jews represent the goal of separating the garment from himself, Amalek represents the other side. Amalek represents the complete identification with the garment. The garment becomes the essence. So, one way of describing the essence of Amalek is that he is his garment. Do you hear? Because he represents the exact opposite of the Torah point of view, that the garment is only external. He sees the garment as being his essence. He feels that the physical is what really counts in the world. The spiritual is non-existent. Now, once we understand this concept that Amalek represents the focusing on the garment as the essence, which means the physical world as the essence, because remember, the garment always remains symbolically our contact with the physical world. What is Arba Kanfois? A beged shel Arba Kanfois is the symbol to Arba Kanfois Ho'oretz, which means our contact with the physical world. And our obligation is the sanctification of the physical world. A Molech represents the focusing on the physical world as the only thing which is important in this world, the only thing which has value. The essence is the physical, not the spiritual. Now, when we ask the question, if a Molech, right, saw that their garments will be recognized, so why didn't he change the garments? Once you take the word garment in its symbolic meaning, that a Molech becomes... We are talking about a spiritual war, a cultural war. They came to destroy the Jewish faith. That's why they came. That was their power. They saw the weakness of the Jews. Aaron just died. They are vulnerable. But so they went in and they started interacting with the Jews. This is what it means. The Jews realized that their culture is a Canaanite culture. It's not an Amaleki culture, it's a Canaanite culture. By the interaction, you can tell that. Were they successful in their endeavors? Partially.
One maid.
But one maid, which means the one which is most vulnerable. They are not so solid in their thinking, so they were caught by the Canaanite culture, which was so appealing. Right?
Was interaction synonymous with Canaanite culture?
Again?
Was interaction synonymous with Canaanite culture?
What do you mean?
You said they began came to interact
with the Canaanites. Remember, with the Canaanites, there is no... The Canaanites, when they come outside of Eretz Israel, we have no obligation to kill them. Right? So they figured that they will live in peace with the Jews, and then at the end they'll do something to destroy us. Whatever it is, first, you know, from within. But this wasn't an actual war. Now, there is no question about it. When the Yalkut Shimoni says that they put their arms mibifnim, the Ayal Kuchimoni is telling you that what? That they kept their arms until the end. It wasn't an open war. Okay? So now we can understand it already. So if so, we can understand this whole portion. If it says, Vaishma Knani Melecharot, the Torah is calling them Knani because culturally they are Knani. Yoishev Hanegev because essentially they are Amaleki. What told the people that they were Amalekim, like the Yalkut Shimoni? They saw their essence. Couldn't fool the Jews. They saw that their essence was Amalekite essence. But so what do you do? Vayish bimenu shevi. After a while, they felt that there is a crack in the strength of Klal Yisrael. Of course, the crack was very small, but that's when how all the problems start. This is Vayidar Yisrael neder Lashem vayomar. The only way to react to such a situation is by destroying them, right? So, im nosoin titene soma ze biodiva haramti esorehem, with the leshem shomaim of the war, right? With the purity of the intention of going to war against them, this is how we are going to destroy them. But this is the meaning of Rashi. Rashi does not mean a physical garment at all. Rashi means exactly what the Yalkut Shimoni, that this garment is the face, which means the pnim, showing what the pnim is. Let's go on to the next part.
Does it mean literally a neder, or does it mean that they fortify themselves spiritually?
The neder is a spiritual fortification. The neder is a spiritual fortification. If you're, yeah.
So that way on the six remembrances, we're supposed to remember what Amalek did to us on the way instead of remembering that Amalek attacked us?
You mean why we don't mention this attack and we mention the first attack? I would say because it's included in it. Because remember, by saying Zohar is Asher Oso Lecho Amolek, but there it says Mitzrayim, it mentioned it in the Meforshim. It means remember Homon. It remember the war against Shaul Hanovi. Shaul HaMelech, or the Shaul HaMelech. So I imagine that we just mentioned the first time around, but it includes all the rest.
In other words, in order to keep them being destroyed spiritually, we had to destroy them physically.
There was no choice. Because remember, the problem with Amalek is that you can't shake the evil out of them. That's the problem with Amalek. Every other nation, there is a way to separate the evil from them. Not Amalek. This is, I told you, Reb Chaim Volozhiner, a tremendous novelty of Reb Chaim Volozhiner. The Reb Chaim Volozhiner says that when the Rambam, you know, that very, very difficult Rambam, when the Rambam talks about our interrelations with the different nations of the world, the Moabites, we're not allowed to marry any male Moabite, the Mitri, after only two generations, we are allowed to marry them, says the Rambam. And today, this is not relevant. Why? Because we don't know who they are anymore. Shekvar Ovad Zichron. We don't know who they are anymore. This is Rambam in Hilchos Melachim. Right? We don't know who they are. And one paragraph after that, he says, and it's a mitzvah to destroy Amalek. So as the Mefarshim, I mean, he just finished saying we don't know who they are because the whole world became mixed up. So how can it be a mitzvah to destroy Amalek? Again, we don't know who they are. Says the Reb Chaim Volozhiner. So from here is a proof that Amalek, we do know who he is. That evil of Amalek is recognizable. You can recognize it. It's clear. You can see the person. Right? So you don't need the genealogical proof in order to prove that somebody is an Amalek. His actions, his ideology will prove that he's an Amalek. This is what Reb Chaim Volozhiner says. Right? Which means Amalek is it's so deep within him that you can recognize it every generation. A Moabite is, that's it, finished. We don't know who the Moabite is. Amalek you'll always know, says Reb Chaim Volozhiner. Let's go on to the next piece. It says like this. All of a sudden, after Hor Hohor, it says, Vayisu Mehor Hohor Derech Yamsuf, Lisboiv Eseretz Edoim, they went around Edoim, Vatiktsar Nefesh Om Badoret. They got tired of what was happening. And they came to Moshe Rabbeinu in Posukei, Vayidaber Om Beloikim and Moshe, Lomo Helisunu Mimitzrayim Lomuzma Mitbor. Why did you take us out of Egypt? Again, the same claim. Ki ein lechem ve'mayim, we have no bread, we have no water. V'nafshenu kotzo ba'lechem akloikel, and we just can't stand the man anymore. So, says the Netzi, we don't have much time, says the Netzi, what's going on? Is it a repeat performance of what happened 40 years ago? Not at all, because he says that originally, that meant a rejection of Moshe Rabbeinu. Now it's not a rejection of Moshe Rabbeinu. Now it's the truth. Why? Because remember, says the Netziv. The Netziv is the one that consistently brings out this point. The last year in the Midbar is the year that the Jews have to get used to that new way of life. Changing from a supernatural life to the natural life. And that adjustment was extremely difficult. Right? So he says, it's part of the adjustment that the man, the spiritual food, doesn't taste good anymore. Okay? So what they said now was true. What they said then was a lie. It was their fault that it didn't taste good. Here it was absolutely true. The whole problem is they shouldn't have complained. They should have said it in a nice way. But the facts were true. This is he understands it, then it seems. And he says, and this is the reason why. Vayishalach Hashem bo'omes ha-nechoshim asrofim in posuk vov. The nochosh is something which is natural in the desert. What kept them up to now, save from nechoshim? The ananei kovod. The ananei kovod aren't here. So now, the reaction is, okay, al pi derech hateva, you'll be bitten by the nechoshim asrofim. Many Jews died just because of the Nechoshim. And they came to Moshe Rabbeinu, and again there was a big problem here. And they asked forgiveness. They did tshuve. And in Posuk Ches, Vayomer Hashem al Moshe, Asei lechos sorof. This is interesting. What does Hashem tell Moshe Rabbeinu to make, to build? A sorof. What is a sorof? A nochosh, a sorof is a nochosh, because remember, how are the nechoshim described in Posuk Vov? Nechoshim hasrofim. So when it says sorof, it means the nochosh. But it's strange why the Torah calls it now sorof. Why doesn't they call it nochosh sorof or nochosh alof? Strange. Vesimoy soyal nes. Vayokol anoshuch v'roi shavachoy. Whoever looks at it, he'll get well. So Moshe. Vayas Moshe, what does he do? What is he supposed to do? To make? A sorrow. Vayas Moshe nechash nechoshes. So he makes a nochosh out of copper. But he was supposed to make a sorrow. So what are you going to say? Well, it's the same thing. It's true, it's the same thing. But that makes the question even more. So why does the Torah call it? When Hashem talks to Moshe, it's called a sorrow. But when Moshe makes it, it's called a nochosh. Right? One of the two. If it's not the same thing, then it's impossible. How can it be that Moshe Rabbeinu is not listening to Hashem? If it is the same thing, so why does the Torah change the way it describes it? And whoever looked at the Nochosh, by the way, you know that Gemara says, Vehoyo, whenever it says Vehoyo, Vehoyo im Shomoya Tishmeu, as opposed to Vayehi, you know the difference between Vehoyo as opposed to Vayehi? Says the Gemara, whenever it says Vehoyo, it means a happy occasion. Whenever it says Vayehi, Vayehi me achashve roish, Vayehi me shvoit ashefting, that's a bad thing that happened. So what should it have said here? But if we are describing someone who was bitten by a snake, what should it have said? Vayehi im Noshach HaNochosh. It shouldn't say Vehoyo im Noshach HaNochosh. So, the Meshech Chochmo says a beautiful pshat, you see. What does it say here? That whoever was bitten by a snake and looked at the copper snake, Vochoy. Vochoy means he became alive, well. So what happens, says the Meshech Chochmo, if a person is very, very ill, right? And he's dying, naturally he's dying. So during this time, that almost dead person, the person who is dying, who gets bitten by a snake, and he looks at the copper snake, what happens to him? He gets well. That's a guarantee. He gets well. The moment he gets bitten, and he looks at the copper snake, he gets well. So all those people who were bitten by the snakes and something ailed them, right? What would happen to them the moment they get cured? It would cure their old sicknesses too. So very often, people who were bitten were very happy that they were bitten. Why? Because in this way they can cure their other illnesses. You hear the Meshech Chochmas Pshat? Because that's what the word Vochoy means. Choy doesn't just mean being alive. Choy means being alive and well. So he says, Vehoyoin Noshach HaNochosh. Very often people were happy to be bitten by the snake. Why? In order to get well. But let me tell you just in the next few minutes, a pshat, which the Ksav Sofer says here, in this change of the Nechasha Nechoshes and the Sorov. What's the difference here? So the Ksav Sofer says the beautiful pshat, he says. Take a look here, what it says in here in Posuk Zion. What is the tshuve of the people? What do they say? Chotonu, we made a sin. Ki dibarnu b'Hashem v'voch. We spoke against Hashem, and we also spoke against you. Which means that the sin before is a double sin. It's a sin between the Jews and God, and it's a sin between the Jews and Moshe Rabbeinu. It's a double sin. Says the Ksav Sofer. What does the Nochosh represent? The Nochosh represents the one who always incites, symbolically, what does the Nochosh represent? The one who incites to do things against God. Right. That's the one Nochosh came to Chavo and tells her, V'yisem kelokim, don't listen to God. Right. So that's what the Nochosh represents. What does the Sorof represent? So it says like this. Sorof, we find that that's also a code word. Why? Because in Pirkei Ovois, in Perek Sheni of Pirkei Ovois, the Mishnah is describing the Talmid Chochom. So the Talmid Chochom, he says, be careful, his Torah is like fire, he says, like Gachaleyes, be careful. You can get warmed by his Torah, but you can get burned by his Torah. Lechishoson, lechishas Sorof. The Sorof is the Talmid Chochom, the carrier of the Torah. So be careful with him. So if it says here that they were attacked by Nechoshim Srofim, and we know that their sin is that they spoke against God and they spoke against Moshe. So the Nochosh represents the sin against whom?
Against God.
Against God. And the Srofim represents what? The sin against Moshe. Okay? Obviously, if it's a double sin, and it says here that the reptiles who attacked the Jews were Nechoshim Srofim, why is there a double lotion? It makes sense that the Nechoshim is Keneged Hashem, the Srofim Keneged Moshe. True? Reasonable. So when Hashem says to Moshe, I want you to build something which you should show what they did wrong. Right? So what does Hashem tell Moshe Rabbeinu to make?
Something
a Sorof.
Something they did against Moshe.
Moshe Hashem is taking up whose kovet? Moshe Rabbeinu's kovet. Now, the point is, so should Moshe have listened to Hashem, or shouldn't he have listened to Hashem? And that there is an incredible insight. But the Chassaf Sofer says it here. I found it in other Meforshim, that in this relationship between Hashem and the people, right? It says, for instance, why Pesach in the Torah? You know how is it called Pesach? In the Torah, it's called Chag HaMatzos. We never call it Chag HaMatzos. You know what we call it? Pesach. We always call it Pesach. So it says in the Meforshim, you know why? Because, you see, let's take the relationship between a father and a son as an example. Let's say the father wants the son to give him something. He says, give me a cup of water, right? Don't give me anything else, just water. Is the son allowed to think, well, he's saying water because he doesn't want to bother me to give him apple juice or orange juice or coffee. But I know that he really wants coffee. So I won't listen to him. I won't give him water. I'll give him coffee. Does he have a right to say it? Or does he have to say, listen, that's what he wants, I'll give him water. So he says, no. We have a right to say, listen, you are Hashem, you worry about us. You are my father, you worry about me. But I am your son. I'm not my father. I'm your son. Therefore, I'll give you coffee, not water. What did you ask me for? Water? I won't give you water. I'll give you coffee. Here. I have a right to say that. Therefore, Hashem calls the going out of Egypt, Chag HaMatzos. What does the Matzos represent? What our doing mitzvos to fulfill in order to get reward, we do mitzvos. This is what Hashem calls Pesach. But what do we call it? Chag HaPesach. Why? Because Pesach reminds us of what? Ki posach al botei bnei Israel, that He saved us. In other words, we take Pesach as a way to bring out the greatness of Hashem, right? Hashem sees Pesach as a way of bringing out Klal Yisrael, that we do His mitzvahs. Same way we said about Bezalel. Remember that Hashem tells Moshe Rabbeinu to build the tabernacle. Remember? To build what first? Yeah. First the Kelim, says Hashem. And then the tabernacle itself. So Bezalel changes. And he builds first the Oihel, right, and then the Kelim. So Moshe Rabbeinu says, wait a second, aren't you going against Hashem? He says, no, that's the way we do things here. So again, the Mephoshim says, what's going on? Hashem said first the Kelim and then the Mishkon. And he does the Mishkon first and then the Kelim. The same idea. What are the Kelim? Things that we use to serve God. What does the Mishkon represent? Shekhinah, the house of God. As far as Hashem is concerned, what's the main thing? The Kelim. For us, what's the main thing? Shekhinah, the presence of God. So that means that even though we are supposed to listen to Hashem, when it comes to the Kovod Israel, vis-a-vis the Kovod Hashem, our goal is the Kovod Hashem. Hashem's goal is the Kovod Israel. So what has Hashem asked Moshe Rabbeinu to build? Sorrow. Keneged whom?
Moshe Rabbeinu.
So does Moshe Rabbeinu have a right to say, no, I'm not going to build a sorrow. I'm going to build a nochosh. Why? That's the Kovod Hashem. Yeah. So this is how the Ksav Sofer understands the change over here.
Yes. Fantastic. I think.